You're listening to AM 970, The Answer. And now, Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, the president of Teamsters Local 237.
Welcome to another edition of Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, president of Local 237 Teamsters. With me, our very special guest is Corey M. Stern. He is a partner. Corey, the law firm that you...
I'm a partner at Levy Konigsberg in Manhattan.
And he represents individuals who have catastrophically been injured, with an emphasis on children that have suffered brain damage from lead poisoning. He also represents people that have been injured through medical malpractice and construction injuries. Corey has recovered tens of millions of dollars for his clients in verdicts and settlements, and has garnered a national reputation for his work on lead poisoning cases. Prior to joining, Corey had practiced extensive areas in complex negligence, civil rights, and a product and product liability in Georgia. And I believe you went to the University of Georgia also.
I did. Go Dogs.
Go Dogs. I happened to be in New Orleans a couple of weeks ago.
I was in Baton Rouge with my children.
Were you?
Yeah.
I was in New Orleans for a conference, and I saw the Dogs fans. If I could say, the Dogs got dogged that day.
We were there in full force, and we left pretty quick when
it
was over.
That was some game, too.
Yeah.
So, Corey, what is lead poisoning?
So lead is it's an element, and it's a neurotoxin, which means that if it's ingested in children especially, it can lead to brain poisoning. So lead poisoning is really brain poisoning. When a child whose brain isn't yet fully functioned, usually kids that are age 6 years old or younger, either through paint dust or water that may have lead or lead in soil, if it's ingested into their body, it absorbs into their blood, and then it absorbs into their muscle and bones, one of their muscles, you know, being the components of their brain. And once it's in their brain, it's game over.
And where is lead poisoning more prevalent?
So children are more likely to be lead poisoned in old housing. In 1978, the United States banned lead from being permissible to be used in paint. And prior to 1978, lead was used sort of as a filler in paint, and it was just extremely prevalent throughout the United States. So in buildings that are older than 1978 is where children are most susceptible, and most of those buildings exist in big cities which have low-income housing, because those buildings are the type that are rarely renovated or kept up with by landlords, whether the landlord is a public entity or a private entity. And in cities like New York or Cleveland or Chicago or St. Louis, where housing is scarce and there's more people that want to live in space than actually have space that exists, children and parents are oftentimes forced to live in housing that contains lead paint. And it's in those places where most children are most susceptible.
Now, what is your experience with lead poisoning?
So, you know, from a professional perspective, I've been handling lead-based paint cases and other lead poisoning cases for almost my whole career. Presently, my most vast experience is in both Flint, Michigan, where we represent about 3,000 children at this point individually who are all lead poisoned by consuming the water in Flint, and in New York City, where hundreds if not thousands of kids have been exposed to lead-based paint in New York City Housing Authority's buildings. A lot of people don't know, but the Housing Authority is the biggest landlord in the city.
It's the biggest landlord in the country.
Yeah, I mean, the population of public housing in New York City is about 400,000 people, which is roughly the same size as the population of Boston, Massachusetts. So just for perspective, most people consider Flint today to be possibly the worst man-made disaster that's occurred in modern times in terms of the lead being tainted with the water being tainted with lead. At the peak of the Flint water crisis, there were roughly 100,000 citizens in Flint. In New York City public housing, there are 400,000 citizens. So the scope of the potential crisis in the New York City Housing Authority is four times as large as what exists in Flint, despite the fact that it's not really getting the same national attention that exists presently and certainly existed previously in Flint.
Now, when you said there are hundreds of children. How many children do you currently represent?
So in New York City alone, and as to the housing authority, yes, we represent about 250 individual children now who all had lead levels at some point in time since 2012, all of whom lived in public housing. We expect that number to grow significantly. You know, the stories of lead and paint and NYCHA, it's fresh, it's new. You know, you have in New York City, you have the ability to file a claim against the housing authority until a child is roughly 19 years old. And so you can have children who today are 18 years old who may have been lead poisoned in 2000. Who are just now realizing, either because they're seeing through the media the coverage of the NYCHA lead crisis, or because they've searched on the internet, you know, issues that they've had to deal with. And so at this stage, when we were in Flint, we probably didn't have many more clients than we do now in NYCHA. But over time, as the information becomes more public and as the conduct that occurred, which allowed the crisis to occur, becomes more public, people start to come out and say, oh, my God, this happened to my child. This happened to me.
What are some of the signs that one could look for, symptoms?
Yeah, so a child who has been lead poisoned will over time show significant cognitive deficits. You know, you're reading paragraph 3 of a book and you can't remember paragraph 1. They also show significant aggressiveness. And so you may have a child who previously was, you know, gentle, calm, nice, and has a little brother, and then as the lead poisoning sets in, they just become extremely aggressive. It's very frustrating for children who can't read paragraph 3 without forgetting paragraph 1, who don't know why they're being aggressive toward a younger sibling. And so the stress and the anxiousness that comes from being lead poisoned just adds fuel to all of the issues that children have. But ultimately, over time, kids who are lead poisoned are far less likely to graduate from high school. They're far more likely to be left behind at least one time, if not more, when they're in grade school. Because they're less likely to graduate from high school, they're far less employable once they reach an age where employment is appropriate for them. And so you create communities where you have quite a number of people who had the capability of doing something when they were born. You know, we're all born with some potential. Don't know what everybody's potential is. It's hard to measure. But every one of us is born with some level of potential. And what lead poisoning does is it takes away a child's potential.
How would someone get in contact with you if they think their child was poisoned by lead?
Yeah, so we take calls and emails all the time from parents, and sometimes, thankfully, their children. I wish that I didn't have this expertise. I mean, I have children of my own, and so I would much prefer to handle a different type of case where it doesn't involve children who are brain damaged permanently. But to the extent anybody ever wants to get in touch with us, you know, my phone number is public, but it's 212-605-6298. You can also call 212-605-6200, and my email address is cstern, S-T-E-R-N, at levylaw, levylaw.com. I'm on Twitter. I'm not a huge Twitter user, but I'm learning to in this day and age, and it's at CMS1000.
Now, let's say your phone number again slowly, because somebody might be running to get a pen, and we're going to...
It's area code 212-605-6200 or 6298.
Now, I want to go back to something that you said. The cases have gone back. How many, you know, could go back as far as 2000? Now you have a couple of hundred children. Mm-hmm. I remember at the press conference, Mayor de Blasio said, "Thank God no child had been harmed." At that point, are you telling me that he knew there were hundreds of children that were poisoned?
So when Mayor de Blasio was the public advocate for New York City prior to becoming mayor, he actually sent a very strong letter to, at the time, Mayor Bloomberg, letting him know how important and how significant and how serious issues of lead poisoning were in public housing. The letter is it's a public record. It's been published in in one of the local newspapers, if not both. And he took a very, very, very hard stand in his position as public advocate in defense of children who were defenseless to lead poisoning. Fast forward, a few years when he's become the mayor, and he now has what I would consider implausible deniability based on his previous record and the statements that he's made. And so when Mayor de Blasio came out and said that, thank God, only two children were hurt, and then weeks later only 16 people were hurt, and then weeks later only 400 people, and then weeks later 862 people, and now today the number is over 1,100 that the city concedes were poisoned, it's extremely disingenuous. And it's a shame because in a place like Flint, Michigan, where the governor, who many attribute responsibility to for the crisis that occurred in Flint, with a Republican governor, the people of Flint are very vocal. They're up in arms. The coverage has been intense. And that politician, the governor of Michigan, he probably will never be able to work in politics again. If it wasn't his second term during which this all occurred, there's no doubt he would not have been reelected. But in our city, which is primarily a city made up of Democrats and folks who are more liberal-leaning or now consider themselves progressives, Mayor de Blasio just sort of gets a pass. I mean, not from me. I mean, I've been very vocal about it, and I think that I've heard people talk about the far left and the far right in politics and how divisive it's become, and I agree, but one of the ways that we allow that to occur is when we are members of a political party and we don't hold our own elected leaders of our party to the same standard that we hold those that we consider to be part of the opposition party. And so I don't think Mayor de Blasio should bear any less responsibility than Governor Snyder in Michigan simply because I consider myself a Democrat and he's a member of the Democratic Party. If anything, the hypocrisy in giving him a pass allows so many other politicians from all different parties to get passes from their own constituents and from the folks that identify with the same party as them. And I think it's even more important in a place like New York, which is comprised primarily of Democrats, liberals, and progressives, to hold Mayor de Blasio not just to the same but even a higher standard than we hold the other party, because if we don't, then we're the hypocrites, not them.
Right. You're listening to Reaching Out. I'm Gregory Floyd, President of Local 237 Teamsters. With me, a very special guest is Corey Stern. He's an attorney, and he specializes in
lead poisoning cases.
Now, we were talking about the mayor and being complicit. So he wrote the letter to, then Mayor Bloomberg. He was a public advocate. So he came in the office knowing fully well the lead poisoning that was going on in the housing authority. I was not aware of it until the story broke in the paper and he said, thank God no child was harmed. I immediately wrote a letter to the then current chairwoman of the housing authority, Shola Olatoye. And instead of answering this letter, you're going to be amazed at this. She, and I also CC'd Bob Lynn, who is the Commissioner of Labor Relations. The two decided that they were going to call a meeting of the Municipal Labor Coalition.
They didn't include you?
No, they included me. But they included the fire department, the police department, the nurses, the doctors, sanitation, corrections, teachers, all of the city unions came to this meeting. And at this meeting, they brought in the commissioners, the commissioner of health, commissioner here, commissioner there, and everybody was a witness to the spectacle. And I say, why was it a spectacle? Because it was at that meeting, Shola said that the housing authority, when it was built, could not afford lead paint. So therefore, lead paint was not used in the housing authority. So not only did she lie on those documents about the removal, she lied in that meeting in front of all those witnesses about lead paint being used. And then they denied it, but it was in the minutes of the meeting. So that was the most amazing thing. I said, it's one thing to lie, but why bring witnesses?
It's, you know, when I lived in Atlanta during the Michael Vick dogfighting stuff. And I remember having some conversations with friends of mine at the time where I really believed strongly that, if you recall, you know, Michael Vick for a long period of time denied that he had any involvement in the dogfighting ring. And then ultimately when the facts came out and there were some videos, you know, he had to cop to it. And he ultimately spent, you know, I think maybe 2 years or somewhere in that range
in prison. Yeah.
I always tell people that I think if Michael Vick had just come out and said at the very beginning, you know, I got to be honest with you. Number one, I didn't know this was something that wasn't okay to do. I grew up in a culture where this was a big part of our lives. And looking at it now from 30,000 feet, this was a bad decision I made. And if I have any message for young kids, you know, don't do what I just did. I don't think he would have spent time in prison, because I think that, you know, sometimes when you come clean, even when you make mistakes, people are forgiving. And then you try and find solutions rather than solutions to your lies. The most troubling and sort of offensive part of all of this for me as a lawyer who sort of digs in deep and reads the documents and gets to depose these people is just the lie upon lie upon lie. And we know that prior to 1978, the NYCHA buildings had lead-based paint in them, and Shola Alatoye had to know that, and the mayor knows that, because there's a history of children that have suffered lead poisoning while living in those buildings. And it's not like when they build, you know, the Red Hook apartment complex, one apartment was built at a different time than another unit. They build the entire building at the same time. So it necessarily means that if child A in unit 6B has lead poisoning, then the child in unit 7B and 8B and 9B and 3B are very much at risk, because the building was constructed at the same time using the same materials. So you have an institution of disingenuous institution, and it's from the top down.
Yeah, and at that time, there was a case that was at least filed in 2010. And this meeting was in 2015.
These cases have been filed as far back as the beginning of lawsuits in New York City. I mean, they've changed statutes and codes and regulations over years and years and years in response oftentimes to the lawsuits. So unless every lawyer and every child who's ever claimed that there's been a child with lead poisoning has just been a part of a giant conspiracy to defraud the city and the housing authority, there's just no real rhyme or reason as to why anybody would deny that it exists and it's something that can happen. And I'd go a step further. I mean, I'm not sure that, you know, and it's not the most popular thing to say in a city that is as liberal-minded and progressive as the one we live in, which I'm proud of. But I don't know if Mayor de Blasio will survive his entire term. I mean, if you watch what happened in Flint, Michigan, and the governor of Michigan, but for the fact that, you know, he was at the end of his term when it sort of came to light, and there was no real push for him to be, you know, removed. I really think once the people in New York City realize what this mayor knew and when, that they are not going to stand for him to remain in his post.
I don't know about that. You and I are sitting here talking about it. Yeah. And right now he's contemplating and trying to run for president.
Yeah.
I mean, his first when he came into office, he wanted to have this political forum in Iowa. And then he's running off to Germany, giving speeches. And then he's going to Italy and he's going to all these places.
He has certainly spent more time in Iowa and at the border between Texas and Mexico, and in Austin, Texas, giving speeches at conferences in the last 6 months than he has in a single NYCHA building. I could tell you that right now.
And he's trying to go down to South Carolina. I mean,
I don't think Mayor de Blasio could carry his own state if he was running for president, let alone a national election. But
so I know he's checked out before he even checked in. So
Well, he should do the citizens of New York a favor and just check out completely, and then let somebody else try and run the city in a way that's at least from a sincere place.
And you and I are talking about it. And there was a homeless woman that approached him, and he could care less. You know, he goes to the gym.
At the YMCA.
He could see him at the Y.
Yeah.
I mean, we could go on and on and on. But unfortunately, the homeless are suffering. NYCHA is suffering. The school system is suffering from violence. We have a crisis with Rikers Island and the raise of age, and the correction officers are getting assaulted, the New Horizons. I could go on and on with different
opioids,
problems. Opioids. Crime that's not being recorded.
Yeah.
I mean, there's a number of things. So I don't think the average New Yorker, with everything going on, is focusing on local government.
Yeah, we live in a fast-paced city, and it's easy in a city that's sort of similarly minded people to not focus as much on him as we do on the president and on a Republican Congress, because the fear that's evoked in us from, you know, what the Republican Congress and what our president has done or not done or told or not told or lied, yes, or been honest, it makes it easy for us to overlook some of the more basic things that are happening at home. But every child, every kid, you know, you and I, you know, we're older. We've made our own decisions, and we've gotten to be sitting in this room at yes, this point in time based on however we got here.
Right.
But our kids, a lot of times, they don't always have choices until they're old enough to make them. And no matter what someone's race is, what their creed is, what their socioeconomic status is, where they live, who their parents are, every kid has the right to live in a place that's safe. And it doesn't have to be a penthouse or a mansion. It doesn't, you know, I understand that not every apartment in the world is created equally. But every parent who has a child that has the right to not have to worry about being poisoned while they sleep, not have to worry about sitting on a floor to play with toys and being scared of a rat, not having to worry about mold that exists, which creates respiratory problems. And so, you know, progressives, which our mayor claims to be one, progressives believe in social justice. They believe in trying to do good for everyone. And there's not a whole lot of progressivism in the way that this administration and the folks in charge of the public housing have treated the children that need them the most.
And we haven't even mentioned the heat. Now, the NYCHA, let me give you my prediction for the heat for this winter. It's going to be a disaster. NYCHA's hired two companies, and those two companies are now being trained by our members because they don't know the heating system. So it's my contention, if you hire somebody, they're supposed to be able to, yeah, do the work. If our people are still in there doing the work, you're actually paying two companies to do nothing.
It's like they're fighting a nuclear war with pocket knives. I mean, that's what it's like. You know, it's the same thing with the lead. I mean, they've got, you know, 30 to 40 lead inspectors to inspect 176,000 apartments in a very short period of time. I mean, it's
By the way, those lead inspectors?
Yeah, trained by y'all?
No. Our members go behind them,
right,
to repair what they didn't do.
Right.
So we're not training them, but we're going behind doing the cleanup. But that's never said. Yeah. But we're actually doing the cleanup of those who are being paid to do the cleaning.
And it's not to mention the fact that over $35 million has so far been spent by NYCHA on litigation, on paying lawyers to defend conduct that to me is indefensible. And that's not because I have a vested interest in it.
Right,
it's because,
right,
I'm a human being,
sure,
with children. Sure. So spend that $35 million on the heat. Spend it on the mold. Spend it,
right,
on the lead. Spend it on things that can actually make a difference in people's lives, not on folks who are trying to defend you from having to do those things.
And they're also trying to this rental assistance development, which is another story, privatization. That's housing is just going to go away. But they're telling the residents, well, we're going to come in and fix it. They don't understand that it moves to Section 8 and it goes under different rules and regulations, and the apartments, the rent is going to go up. And if you, yep, can't afford it, you're going to go out.
It's almost like it's a very subliminal way to rid the city of low-income folks. And, you know, if it was a Republican mayor or governor that were insisting on some of these things, we would call it a race-based, you know, endeavor. But because it's a Democrat who claims to be progressive, we make excuses. It's not that. It's just bad planning. It's just, you know, we don't have the right people right now in charge. You don't understand how the rent's going to work. There's misconceptions. We're going to get a committee to review it, and then we'll come back with a report. And ultimately, people just fall into their lives, and they try and pay their rent, and they try and feed their family. And by the time they realize what's about to hit them, it's too late for them to do anything about it. And it's a real shame.
That's unfortunate. But listen, we're going to invite you back. You have any other cases and you want to talk about it, we're going to invite you back because you are very informative.
Thank you.
Informative.
Anytime. I appreciate you having me.
Gregory Floyd, President, Local 237 Teamsters, our very special guest, Corey M. Stern, attorney representing lead poisoning.
Thanks for listening to Reaching Out with Gregory Floyd, president of Teamsters Local 237. Join us each and every Saturday night at 7, right here on AM 970, The Answer.